Welcome, everybody. Delighted to have back the very popular man of the, well, the commodity biker. I think he traveled around the world on a motorcycle at one stage. I'm not sure he's ready to do it anymore at his sprightly young age, but it is Jim Rogers from Singapore. Jim, delighted to have you back. Thanks for coming on.
I am delighted to be here, Francis. It's great fun. Actually, I went around the world twice, Francis, for what it's worth. I went around once on a motorcycle and had so much fun that I did it again in a car.
Very good.
Maybe I'll do it again someday when my children get older.
Yes, with a solar paneled spaceship. Who knows? That's right. Jim, wow. We're going into 2024, and I'm really interested to. I suspect it's going to be more of the same in terms of reviews. I'm not sure they will have changed just because of a calendar year, but I have one major dilemma that I'm confronting at the moment, and it's about everybody's expectations for rate cuts. And I keep pointing out that for rates to go down, bond valuations or government treasuries or whatever the underlying debt instrument may be have to actually go up. And that means there is a demand for them that is bidding up the stack, and that everybody's expectations for rate cuts are a little bit oversold. And we're starting to see a little bit of that, despite the protestations of the Fed and the ECB and the BOE. They all seem to be saying, don't get overly excited. So they're the only ones who are talking that down. But they talk all about the inflationary side, but they don't talk about the glut of debt and how it can continue to climb in value for those rates to come down. Is there something I'm missing? Because I feel like I'm a lone voice in the wilderness, and everybody else is talking about it's only the economy and that central bankers can cut rates regardless. And we are, of course, talking to you, the man who was at one point part of the Quantum Fund, when the British, the Bank of England, actually raised rates twice in one single day, not out of choice, but out of force. And that's at the periphery, the market set the rates. Central bankers in normal environments are all controlling, but that control goes away once markets lose faith. Is that a right summation, or how do you see this dilemma?
Well, everything you said is correct, but I just wanted to say that, as you just referred, when the market takes over, then things are out of control. That's when things really get crazy in the market. So if the markets start setting interest rates, at the moment the central banks are setting interest rates, so they think they are. But if and when the markets say, wait a minute, we've been to this rodeo before, we know how it ends, we're not going to play your game anymore, then that's when you have serious problems and chaos. We're not there yet. The debt keeps going higher and higher. It's astonishing to me. If you look out the window, you cannot believe how high the debt is and going up every day. Well, the market can look out the window too, but the market so far is playing the same game, same rodeo, but eventually, the market's going to say, hold on, we've seen this movie. We're not going to play anymore. And then it's chaos. And I would suggest to you that sometime in the future, I have not sold short at the moment, but at the moment, or sometime in the future, things are going to get out of control and we're going to have the worst bear market in my lifetime. And I just want to quickly explain. In 2008, we had a big bear market because of too much debt. Francis, look out the window. The debt is skyrocketing. It's never, ever in the history of the world. Even China has a lot of debt now. 2008, they bailed the world out. But now even China has a lot of debt. So the next time has to be horrible. Unless you know something I don't know.
No, I'm just deeply comforted that one of the great minds who actually was actively involved in the markets and has the memory, and we've got to tap our wisdom and our people with the experience of yours because there's many younger folk who won't even know about the Bank of England collapse. They were not financially active back then. It's now a good few decades, a bit of mileage on both our clocks. But it's worth reminding them, because everybody seems to have this absolutist, and of course the central banks like to maintain that notion, belief that the central banks are driving the car. But it's almost like you're hurtling down a windy cliff road. We have a few of them down here in Cape Town, and the front wheel blows out. The driver is no longer in control. Initially, he's steering the vehicle, but then all sorts of other dynamics come in. And if you get pulled to the left, you can turn the steering wheel as hard as you like to the right, but you're going over that cliff in that 4x4, and it's not a soft landing, to coin the Yellen's current phrase. On that point and on that note, isn't it interesting, Jim, at a point when you would imagine that they need as much confidence and as much bid under the debt markets, that we actually have this talk and narrative of potentially confiscating the 300 billion of Russian treasuries that were initially frozen. How's that for a little suicide shuffle for you? What's your take on that?
Well, we all claim to be Christians or Muslims or something. We all claim to have ethical backgrounds. I never quite can understand how they can defend, oh, let's just take their money. Yep. They're bad guys, so we'll take their money. I don't know how you're going to defend taking somebody's money, even if he's a bad guy. And of course, they don't say they're bad guys. They say what we did for rational and good reasons. So no, I certainly cannot defend it, do not defend it. No, it sets horrible precedences whenever it happens, because then someday somebody else is going to say, well, wait a minute, let's just take their money. They're bad guys. Let's take it. It's not going to be fun.
Yeah. And I mean, sort of even create some, even if they create some proxy special tax or something, and they legalese that way around it, it's going to be some form of confiscation, isn't it? And this in terms of confidence for the bid under debt market and what that means, because most retail are not involved in bid in the market. And this is what they don't understand about the debt markets, that it's institutional, it's pension funds, and of course, it's other central banks. So if you started behaving like that, what's the precedent that judgment calls can't be made on pension funds in wrong countries, other central banks? South Africa's having a poke at Israel on the genocide legalese. Let's say they held treasuries. I'm not sure they do. But other countries in a similar situation, you could start to have, well, you're not such a big friend, and we find a moral issue with that. And even your friends start to not look at you the same if you're going to be that guy who finds a reason to just take and confiscate, steal, basically, other people's money in a system that's supposed to be agnostic. Surely this is absolutely further accelerating the point to which debt markets will become a fail.
It's supposed to be agnostic, but it's also supposed to be moral and honest. They always have a reason. They always come up with a reason when they want to take somebody's money. They don't just say, oh, let's just take their money. No. They always have a good reason. You know, they have people staying up all night figuring out good reasons to take your money. And they'll do it again. But speaking of the current situation, and I want to remind you that in 1924, Britain was the richest, most powerful country in the world. There was no number two. 50 years later, it was bankrupt. Yeah. When I say bankrupt, I mean they couldn't pay their bills, and the IMF had to fly into London Airport to bail them out. So things do change and can change. And the United States is now the largest debtor nation in the history of the world. It's not a good time to be an old American, Francis. It's not, well, it is a good time to be an old American. It's not a good time to be a young American.
Yeah.
My children are going to have huge problems in the next 50 or 60 years. Fortunately, I'm not going to pay the bills. I'm not going to pay the debt because I'm going to be gone.
Yeah.
My children and all the young people in America are going to have big problems.
Yeah, I agree. I absolutely agree. And it's interesting. I also say something else, and tell me if you concur with this. We had a 40-year bull market from Volcker right the way through to 2020, literally almost 40 years to the T, sort of 1980 to 2020. And you have a kind of escalator with steps and pullbacks, but it's a staircase escalator that goes away up. It doesn't unwind in the same way. It's the escalator up and the elevator down type scenario, isn't it? So this, and your example on Britain, it was given the extent of the British Empire, it kind of started to go quite quickly, pretty badly wrong. And the suggestion is we're at far further extremes now. So it's more likely to have an even greater accelerant to the point of, revaluation, let's just say, a true mark to market in terms of value. Is that something you would expect, or do you think it's possible for us to have a 40-year slow unwind?
Well, of course, I don't know. I have to watch your show to find out. But you're right. We did have a 40-year bull market in U.S. government bonds. And it's 40 years. It's, by the way, for what it's worth, before that, it was a 40-year bear market in government bonds. And from the 40s into 1980, bonds, went straight down. I mean, not straight down. Nothing goes straight down. But, went down for 40 years. The bonds went down. Interest rates went higher. Now we've had 40 years the other way. I don't know if there's any magic about 40 years, but I do know interest rates are going to continue to go higher. Not every day. Markets don't do that. But we are going to have higher interest rates because the debt everywhere. America is now the largest debtor nation in the history of the world, and it gets worse every day. Even Japan, even Germany. Oh, my gosh. Everybody's building huge debts now. Britain, of course, Britain is a basket case if they have to pay their bills. So many countries. No, it's going to be a big mess. As I say, it's a good time to be an old America. Not a good time to be a young American.
Yes. And this is the West, but it's also China, as you mentioned, because they created the heat post the what was, in for me, a depression, 07, 08, all the way through. They were the buying all the resources. Everybody was talking China, the great nation. They still will be. But some of that sizzle went out after the 2016, what was codenamed the Shanghai Accord. So we are now all lepers in the leper colony, and it seems like a synchronization for that great reset. What would be your primary positioning for the banking system? My frustration, let me rephrase the question, is that many people don't realize that the debt collapse is a debt interest rate spike. So everybody who is leveraged in terms of a home, a vehicle, or other assets who borrows to buy, which is now a very bad idea, in my opinion, is essentially going to be unable to afford payments or get refinance if they manage to get a fixed deal for a certain period and that ends. They're unable to get new finance in an affordable manner. So that's going to cause an asset price serious revaluation. That's particularly property. We're already starting to see it in commercial property, especially with the other trends, work from home and various other things going on. All of these assets are going to go down, and this is going to destroy the banking system as well with all the clientele, because these banks are all going to be largely bankrupt. So there has to be a big bonfire event. Is there any way we avoid this, or is that you can never say there has to be, but on balance of probabilities, it seems deeply likely. Is there any way of tiptoeing our way through this minefield?
You say you can never say never. I'm going to say it's going to happen. Yes. Yeah. I'm going to say
never.
Yes. I'm going to say it. You don't have to say it, but everything you just described has happened many times in history. Every time in history, we've had problems. And the politicians throughout history have always said, oh, don't worry. We'll take care of them. We're Britain, we're the most powerful country in the world. Or we're France, whoever it was at the time. Spain, oh, don't worry. We're the major country in the world.
We're good
Please,
for
this
it.
This has happened.
Put it on our tab. We're good for it.
Yeah, we can always sell more bonds. We can always borrow more money. This is not the first time. It's happened repeatedly throughout history. I told you, 1924, Britain was the richest, most powerful country in the world. Only 50 years later, they were bankrupt, had to be bailed out by the IMF. And I'm not going to call any names, but there are plenty of people right now who've got staggering debts that are going higher and higher every day. It's remarkable to me that Japan, how much debt Japan has built up. You know, Japan has got a population declining for 15 years and debt skyrocketing every day for many years. And they keep borrowing more money. I don't know who lends it to them. I don't, but somebody does. But it's not just Japan. It's happening in many places. So I repeat, you say we can't say this. Well, I'm going to say it. It's happened often, and it always leads to very, very serious problems. And we're going to have them again.
Yeah. Yeah. No tiptoeing away. I mean, that's my same very conclusion. I just verbally avoid ever being absolutist about anything, but I just can't see another way around. And the funny thing with that is people think, well, I'll be in equities and it's an inflationary environment, I'll do fine. When bonds crash, my equities will go up. And I have a real problem with people that think there's going to be, when you have such a that scale of the disinflationary event is going to lead to a liquidation in all asset classes, because people that are engaged in one market are also engaged in the other, and they're getting margin calls and they're getting closed out. It's a liquidate environment. So surely everybody becomes sellers. The notion that, oh, your Apple stock or Amazon, your Magnificent Seven will actually do a 2x because all the bond money will be rushing into stocks. How do you see, in your probability forward casting, the play out on any asset classes apart from, say, gold? I divide the asset classes into capital preservation or return of capital versus return on capital assets. So gold, I put in the sort of preservation basket. There's a few other things, but most other things have leverage in them, including property. Even farmland will have leverage in it. So surely there is a massive disinflation in prices, and only very small certain markets could actually be upside movers in the D-Day events, the rolling weeks of, like the Lehman moment, only I suspect far larger. How do you see that?
Well, Francis, I'm interested to hear you say that there are people who say we're not going to have bear markets again, that stocks are never going to collapse again. That's very, very good news. I wish it were true. I don't know who those people are, and I don't bother. I don't want to meet them because they're going to tell me the same thing, and I'm going to scoff and walk away. I know we're going to have more bear markets in stocks and in everything, anything you want to come up with, even gold. You know, we've had some huge bear markets in gold and silver in history and in my lifetime and in your lifetime. So I own gold, I own silver, yes. And if it goes down, if one of them goes down a lot, I hope I'm smart enough to buy more. But that does not mean they can't go down. You look back at bear markets, often gold has collapsed in bear markets. Now, it comes back. It's always come back. It's at an all-time high now. But don't tell me that there's nothing that will save you, because I don't know what it is. And if you tell me what it is, send me an email, but I'm not going to believe you, because I know that in bear markets, everything goes down. Yeah. It's not fun.
Yeah. But we're almost talking about a different kind of bear market. We're talking about the mother of all bear markets, where everybody's going to be pressed into physical, held, owned capital preservation. And there's just not enough people holding that. And they're going to be forced sellers of most of everything else. And how does that lead to anything going up for that period? You know, you have that. I'm talking about that. Everybody refers, they always think that it's a straw that breaks the camel back. You know, it was Lehman that brought the subprime down. You know, meanwhile, it was the entire buildup, the lending, the entire process. It was just Lehman that happened to be the particular step, the final straw almost, that pushed it, that snapped the back of the camel. But many people are always going to have that halo moment, because people are driven by narratives and stories. When we're in that unique period, which is sheer bedlam, and I remember the Lehman moments very, very well. I was in a property investment company, which was we were trying to get finance for people to buy to let properties. And then it was just, there's no product. There are no products. No bank is offering. You know, you've never had, it's literally store empty type scenarios. It was deeply unique. And we're going to have something similar on a grander scale. In that environment, surely even gold, because those people who own gold for preservation won't have seen the scale of this and they'll be leveraged somewhere else, will need to sell their gold to try hang on to their house, which is over leveraged or something else. Surely it's a whole market bid down, and then they're going to probably close market. I'm trying to scenario cast. This is guesswork. It's forward looking. Surely they'll do circuit breakers and say, you know, it's too much of panic selling. You can't get out and people will be stuck, you know, trying to liquidate. And there will be calls and emails and, you know, grid down and all sorts of things that could be associated with this type of event. What's your play out and how do you prepare for something like that? If you don't own it, hold it, and it's not in your hands and it's not physical, what else should you do?
Well, Francis, I repeat, it has always happened. There's never been a time in world history. We've always had bear markets. And when we have bear markets, everything or nearly everything collapses, at least for a while. Yes, 2008 was a bad time in the world, but gold went down a lot, at least for a while. It was one of the first things to rally and to come back up, and it usually has been that way. But if you can find me, and I want to meet those people who tell you, don't worry, it's not going to happen again, because I know they're nuts. I want to short what they're on, because when they have to sell, everything's going to collapse. Mm. No, I mean, I don't particularly like saying this, but I have to deal with facts. Mm. And I'm simple enough to know what history says. And it always says, if you're leveraged or if you're in an industry that's having trouble, you're going to have trouble too. Yeah. You can look out the window and say, what are you talking about? I own Apple and Apple will never go down. Mm. Well, good luck. Good luck. Yeah. I'm looking for that thing which will never go down, and I own gold, and I know gold can go down too.
So actually, we're getting the setup for another big short, aren't we? If for those that like the Michael Burry, he was the one that got characterized by in a film called The Big Short. I assume you're somewhat familiar with it, on his hedge fund that took substantial positions on the worst category of subprime debt through Goldman Sachs, no less, who failed to give him mark-to-market updates and kept saying it was at par. And then he would short some more until eventually they said, no, we're not allowing you to short anymore, but it's still valued at par. There's no offer. I don't know if you remember that detail, until subsequently a whole bunch later, after they had laid off their risk, got confirmed that AIG was going to be the bag holder for them and made whole, that they finally, you know, conceded the complete loss in valuation of that he'd shorted. Are we not, and in the sense, that was just a dress rehearsal. That was a minor event for what will be known as the mega short, almost. And look, it's not for everybody. This is kind of a trading idea. Most people are investors and ordinary retail. But are we not sitting here in the setup and the opportunity for such a thing? And before I finish on that, is it not even such that there's no broker that you could reliably place this bet with, because it's such a big short that you could be so right that there is no counterparty that will still be standing for you even to collect your check afterwards? That's my question, I suppose.
Well, I'm going to shift to another place a little more neutral, and that's back to Japan. You know, Japan, I'm bullish on the Japanese stock market. I don't own it. I sold out last week a little too soon, but I suspect that the Japanese market's going to go back to all-time highs. The all-time high was in 1990, believe it or not, 34 years ago. It was at 40,000. The Japanese market is now, for many reasons, going, in my view, going to go back to that high. And then, even then, though, everybody's going to say, well, look, the Japanese are different. I don't know if you remember the 80s, but everybody said, yes, the Japanese are different. Yeah. You cannot say that about Japan because it's different. Well, they found out they weren't different. They weren't different at all. But the Japanese will collapse too. They have staggering debt. They have a declining population. I mean, it's a wonderful country. I hate to see it because I love the place. Yeah. But no, Japan is going to collapse too. And when Japan collapses, the other people who haven't collapsed are going to collapse too. People are going to look out the window and say, Oh my God, did you know Japan collapsed? Just like they looked out their window and said, oh my God, Lehman Brothers? Lehman Brothers had been around 150 years. How could it collapse? Well, it did. So again, I want to repeat, this is not the first time. All of this has happened before, and it's going to happen again. One of the slight differences that I can see, and I haven't done enough research, but I don't think in world history the debt has ever been so high everywhere like it is now. I mean, it's staggering how much debt there is. You know, the largest in the economies in the world have big debt, and the debts are going higher. Yes, we've had things like that, but I don't think ever in world history have things been this extended as we are now.
Yeah.
And I don't know how people are going to survive. I hope I survive. You know, you can sit here and have a lot of cash, but you better have the right cash. In 2007, there were a lot of people who said, ah, this is going to come to an end. I know some guys or off some guys. They took all their money, sold out of the markets, and put all the money in cash in Icelandic krona. Well, then Iceland went bankrupt. You know, I'm sure those guys didn't think that Iceland could go bankrupt, but it did. So it does, you have to be careful of your cash too. Who knows? South African rand? I don't know. I don't know which cash will be the best cash.
No, definitely not the rand. We've got that about ready to start another slide as an emerging currency in trouble. That's why I'm interested that you even refer to it as a bear market, because I just think it's not something we've ever seen before, because it's the globally synchronized. We had the Great Depression that was US, and it did have an effect on Europe. But the rest of the world were varying degrees of separation from that. Nowadays, it is the globally synchronized leper colony, where you've all got to kiss the chief leper to join the club. And that means proper full indebtedness. And there is virtually no place to hide. So this is essentially the great seizure of the entire planet in similar type situation. Australia, New Zealand, you know, it doesn't matter where you go, south of Latin America, Alaska, they're all in on it.
Well, North Korea is not in on it. Nobody will lend money to North Korea. So I don't think that North Korea is a gigantic debtor. But other than places like that, isolated places like that, you're right, everybody's got big debt now. Uzbekistan is in better shape. Uzbekistan, North Korea, et cetera, but those are not places to hide when things start coming apart at the seams, because everybody gets affected. And even the countries like North Korea and Uzbekistan, they will be affected because everybody else is affected.
Correct.
No, you can't run out. You can't escape if the whole world's in trouble.
100%. Yeah. By association. Yeah. So, gold, what is your outlook for 2024? Is it going to be the year outside of this event striking us, which I think we've all agreed could lead to mass liquidations of all assets? That apart, and even if it were to happen, would it be one of the better rebounders? Are we right to be thinking that 2024 is going to be a bit of a new highs gold year?
New high for gold? Well, gold is at a new high. It's already made new highs.
Beyond that, 2,500, 3,000. I mean, you know, we're through 2,000. We hit 2,150, and we're winding up again, looks like, to make new highs. Do you feel that this is going to be a year, the year of gold, that we'll be progressing?
Well, I own gold, but I'm not buying it because it's at a new high already. If I were buying anything today, it would be silver. Yes. Silver is down 60% from its all-time high, and gold is at its all-time high. I'm not buying either, but if I were buying one, I would buy silver today. And I hope if opportunities come along, I will buy more of both sometime in 2024, because I do expect, and I don't know when, expect a serious bear market in assets around the world. And when it happens, I mean, come on, Francis, I'm an old peasant. Us old peasants like to have some gold under the bed. We'd like to have some silver in the closet because we know when things go really bad, all us peasants want to have a little gold and silver. So I have some, and I hope I'm smart enough to buy more. Will it save me? I hope it saves me. I don't know if it's going. I'm going to make a fortune. I might. You know, at times you can make a fortune when the world's collapsing if you own gold and silver. But if it just saves me, I'll be happy. I'll be very happy. Won't have to jump out the window.
Absolutely. And energies, Jim. A lot of people think great things for energies, but I fear this demand is the economy is a lot weaker than people say. So when you have energies, obviously there's uranium, which is a bit more of an institutional, and it's an outlier, and it's doing really well. But I'm talking about oil and gas, the kind of things that are getting bought and are affected by retail on travel, business, cars, packaging, and plastics. How do you see the year ahead? Because I feel it's a commodity, and I am generally macro, most commodity bullish, mainly because of the fiat proliferation. I think it's more a function of the fact that money is being devalued, that even commoditized products that are very efficient and have moderate, very menial profits now have to start moving. They're almost always the last things to move. We've had asset price inflation. We've had all the other inflations already. But what's your take for the energies? Is there anything interesting in the energy markets? How's your view on oils, gas, and any in that space generally?
Well, in the kind of scenario we've been discussing, oil and gas and even uranium will go down at least for a while, just like gold goes down in bear markets, whether we like it or not. And so certainly I own energy, but I'm not buying now because I know that if a bear market does come, the price of oil is going to go down a lot. And everybody will say, how can that be? Sure. Just look at bear markets and you'll see how it can be. It would be a great chance to buy more energy, certainly. But I'm not buying oil and gas now or even uranium, and I own all three, thinking they will not go down in a bear market, because they will. I don't know anything that won't go down. I'm sure there's something out there that I haven't thought of, that most of us have not thought of, but I don't know what it is.
Yeah, well, it sounds like a short positioning on debt and economics, macroeconomic commodities even could in the right moment, if timed well, be one of the best trades of the year. So you may well be at some point this year. Do you think we're going to get that corrective force, the beginning of that? Well, we're already in that process, but the intensification of the resetting financial process where we could have that panic, is it on your cards for 2024?
2024. I have to watch your program to find out the timing. But what will happen is when things are getting bad, governments around the world will start printing more money. They will print lots of money because they think that will save us. And that will mean that the price of real assets, whether it's silver or wheat, whatever it is, will be strong or stronger than other assets, because governments are going to try to save us, and they think money printing will save us. Makes it worse in the end, of course, but that's all they know. That's why central bankers work for the government. They can't get real jobs. They have to work for the government, and all they know when you work for the government is print money.
You
can tell them it's not the right thing to do, but they'll laugh at you and say, you don't know what you're talking about. I went to an Ivy League college. I have Ivy League degrees.
And this one is not the, in your mind, is this not the potential, because of the synchronization, the scale, and the rate of preparedness, is this next, as you refer to it as a bear market, I call it an entire financial reset, is this not the one that's going to lead us into their new envisaged solution after a panic period where they'll be wheeling out the likes of the CBDCs, and we end up on a whole new wipe the slate clean, start over in a very beneficial way for them? Because I'm seeing the malfeasance, I'm seeing the loss of rule of law, I'm seeing all of this coming. It is the end of empire conduct, and it feels like we're about to wipe the slate. This could be the one that ends this era and we end up with the technological global surveillance solution. It feels more than just another bear market. In other words, it does it feel like that to you?
As you said, it's going to be the worst bear market in my lifetime. But that's not just another bear market. I've seen a few. But yes, everything you described will happen. They will panic. They will call in experts, learned experts, tell them what to do. And maybe we may grab for gold and silver at some point because they're scared and they don't know what to do. They may try for electronic money. Probably we will have electronic money someday. I don't know what they'll grab for. These guys are not very smart, but they will grab for something because they want to save themselves. But unfortunately, I don't see how any of that, it causes big rallies, causes huge rallies. You know, in the big bear market of the 30s, there were some gigantic rallies along the way, even though the world was coming to an end. And unfortunately, times like this have often led to, well, they always lead to trade wars, but they often lead to shooting wars as well, because people get angry and they blame the foreigners. I can promise you that in Washington, they're not going to say, you know, this is our fault and we're all going to resign. No, they're going to say it's the foreigners. It's the evil foreigners that are causing these problems. But throughout history, that's what people do. It's easy to blame the foreigners, and they always blame the foreigners first when things go bad.
Yeah.
And that's why it often leads to shooting wars.
Yeah. Yeah. The Russian hack, the Chinese hack, or the something along those lines, I think, as well, could come into play for the new solution. Go ahead.
Maybe they'll blame it on Rhodesia. Except there is no Rhodesia anymore. They used to blame it on Rhodesia. But not now, I don't think.
Yeah, it doesn't hold the same weight anymore, I'm afraid, even in Africa, Zimbabwe. What's going to be your big forecast, Jim, if you were doing anything? I mean, you mentioned, we spoke actually, funny enough, about when we last spoke, I mentioned to you, why was no one looking at the Japanese market? And we felt the majors, it was 6 months ago. And since then, the Nikkei has moved famously. You said you have already got out. We actually have a technical target for a fair bit more to come. You mentioned you might have been a bit early, but are there any other themes similar to that? And do you still like that one, even though you've exited? Are you kind of, there still feels like a bit more in it? What's catching your eye? If I were to give you $10 million and say, Jim, park that up with me, for me, it's not in cash. You have to find a place for it. How would you spread it around?
You gave me $10 million, I'd go to the beach and never see you again. Find a nice secluded beach somewhere.
Go around the world again in a Ferrari. Yeah.
But the part of the problem, not the problem, but as I said, I expect this is not over yet. I can see the signs and we're coming to the end. I've seen these signs before. You know, a lot of new people are coming in. They're inexperienced, they're buying everything. They say the stock market always goes up. It's fun. It's easy. They're always talking about how easy it is now. Well, that's happened before. The Japanese market, as I said, will probably make new highs. But as far as I can tell, and my market timing is never great, but I suspect that we're coming to the end, that 2024 will be the end, but it might not. Who knows? They might just keep pumping and printing and pumping and printing for a while. The Chinese market is down. It's a gigantic market. They could somehow get it up. The Japanese market has not made an all-time high in over 30 years. It can make an all-time high. So there are still places that markets can go up, which is why I have not started selling short yet. And when I start selling short, my timing is not any good, so it probably will not be the right time. But you know, I don't see any way, Francis, that this cannot be the end. Mm. Not today. But as I look out the window, everybody, this has all happened before in every bull market. It happened. It ends this way. I don't know. Maybe you know something I don't know.
No.
And maybe I'm usually too early. I'm obviously too early again, but I'd rather be too early than late. Too late. There's as long as I get in the right assets.
Yeah, there's an interesting cycle because 2020 was a bad year. 16 was that Shanghai Accord. 2012 was, you know, the QE twos, threes, and twist. And now we're coming, and they were all election year cycles as well. So 24 is this eerie feeling of significance. And ironically, although you're probably not a Bitcoin fan, Bitcoin has a halving cycle that all is synchronized. So we have a quantitative easing cycle that has typically been every 4 years. So we were talking about 40 years, and you very interestingly were highlighting the bond markets 40 year. And that doesn't mean it's going to do the same thing going forward either. But it is an interesting period. And we're now having this sort of 4 year cycle where you have a Bitcoin goes up on this halvening, this reduction of supply idea. But it's also what people forget. It's always been associated with a collapse and a quantitative easing cycle and a weakness in the dollar, which obviously it's just the most volatile instrument. And we've got the election cycle and it kind of a tidy way of, well, it was the end of my years, you know, and I bugger off. And now it's the new guy's problem. But he says, well, it didn't really happen on my ship, but now I've got to clean up the mess. There's a tendency for, you know, things to happen at the key moments on the 4 year cycle.
Well, I don't know whether there's a 4 year cycle or a 100 year cycle. I'm not smart enough to know that. But then, and I don't own any Bitcoins. I never have. I've never shorted any, so I've done nothing. It's as far as I can see, there are trading vehicles, and many people have done well. Many of those crypto monies have disappeared and gone to zero, as you know. Yeah. People don't talk much about those, but that's in my view what's going to happen in the end. But if people want to trade them, so I don't care. Let them do it. Let them do it all day long, and I hope they all get rich. I don't see, though, that, for instance, the U.S. government, I know all governments are working on computer money. I don't see the U.S. government someday saying, okay, guys, this is money now. But if you want to use that money, you can use that stuff, too. Governments don't like competition. Governments want monopoly. And the governments have the guns. But I don't particularly like it. I wish we could use anything. At times in history, people could use anything. Unfortunately, now the governments have the guns, and we have to do what they want eventually.
Yeah. You brought up a very good point that I struggle with in the crypto space. If you have a central bank digital currency that has, it has to be used by a certain time, otherwise it starts degrading or minimizing, or has a negative interest rate associated with it, or is, you know, won't allow you to buy stake more than a certain allowance. And why would you hold that currency if Bitcoin's around and you can spend it any way you like? As soon as everybody got a central bank digital token, they would sell it all for Bitcoin, especially as Bitcoin supposedly is limited. Although, like any constitution, we've certainly seen plenty of fiddling practically in terms of how the constitutions are implemented. But everyone would just dump the statist money and grab Bitcoin. They can't coexist together. Every time I game theory this, I think one has to become, you know, a long-term storage thing, maybe for the elites, or if it's to continue to exist and not really be very transactional or a lot of paperwork or form filling. You either bury it in bureaucracy. That's the only way I see it surviving. To make it seem less attractive, but more likely, it just becomes an asset. It just becomes maybe an ETF vehicle for BlackRock. Okay, but after I don't see this allowance, like you say, for this flourishing other independent money alongside central bank digital currencies. But most people just don't game theory that, or they don't want to. I feel that a lot of people just seems to be happy to go into an unthought through, ungame theoried cling to this is going to be my lifeboat and on this hill I will die. And that's it's disappointing to me, the lack of rationality and forethought and the self-awareness and the degree of potentially stress testing every synopsis. Everything I own, I'm always asking, but what if, and trying to disprove the hypothesis. And I just think is that a flaw of scientific endeavor, something that only a few of us have? Jim, are we unique? Or maybe will we be proven wrong and we're missing something?
Well, I have learned in my investing career that human beings can do some really strange things, and governments can do even stranger things. And especially since the governments have the power and the guns, even no matter how strange it sounds, they will go on TV and explain to you why it's great and why it is good for you. They will explain why this madness that they're proposing is good for the world and good for you too. Yeah. Don't worry, Francis, this is good for you. And as I say, they have the guns. Governments throughout history have done strange things. And maybe you and I and or some people like us will have gold and silver in the closet. But government that doesn't mean the government won't still say, okay, money is now this money on the computer, and whether you like it or not, you better use it.
Yeah.
And I won't like it. I won't like it. They don't care. You know, seen many decree. Strange things happen.
Yeah. By decree, once the entire game, and there's no further options because the whole world is in the same place. It's not like you can have arbitrage. This is why I point to the synchronization of all major nations into the situation. This is, in essence, a bit NWO, I'm afraid to say, because you won't have optionality because they'll all be doing something very similar in the same way they all joined the leper colony with the debt. And it's a little bit doomsday and a bit blackpilled in a way to say there's not many too many places to hide. Are you happy as Singapore as your location? You're settled there, and you know the government is quite orderly there. They don't tolerate too much mischief.
No, we're very keen on Singapore. We've lived here for several years now. Every country has some negatives, and I'm sure you or somebody can come up with many negatives about Singapore. We can come up with negatives about everywhere, including South Africa.
Oh, yes.
So yes, but I have no idea if and when there's a shooting war, how Singapore will be as a location or South, any place. No, go back. There was a guy in 1938 in Paris who saw it was all coming to an end. He got out his globe, searched the world, found a small island in the South Pacific, and he fled to wait out the war because he knew the world was coming to an end. Well, he went to a small island in the South Pacific called Guadalcanal, became the site of the longest and biggest horrible battle in the Pacific War. He was a genius. Being a genius can ruin you sometimes. So I have no idea where I will be if and when shooting war comes. But I do know I'm more worried about the financial markets. At the moment, I'm quite content. But if and when the bear market comes, I know it's going to be vicious and strange and terrible, and many people will lose everything. I hope I don't, but I know we all have to be worried and prepared.
Yeah.
And you can ask me how to prepare. I own gold and silver, but I don't know if that's going to be the way to be prepared 5 years from now, 10 years from now. Who knows? But I certainly own them both now.
Yeah, great. Excellent, Jim. Well, I've really enjoyed the chat. Any final thoughts that you have for the year ahead or messages to the many that will be watching and fans of yours?
Well, I would suggest that everybody do their homework, because if you know what's going on, you'll be worried. And if you're worried, you'll be prepared. You will do something to prepare. I hope you do the right thing to prepare. I hope you don't move to Guadalcanal. So just be worried and be careful, because the next time around is going to be bad.
Yeah, absolutely. I have to say I concur. Really insightful, and I've really enjoyed it. Thank you so much for your time, Jim, and have a great rest of your day. And we'll speak again, I'm sure.
Likewise. Hope to see you in South Africa or somewhere in the future.
Looking forward to that. Bye-bye for now, Jim.
Bye. Bye-bye.